This is America's Sports Talk Show, Sports Byline USA. Here's Ron Barr.
Elgin Baylor is in the Hall of Fame. 14 years in the NBA, all of those with the Lakers, and his 27.4-point scoring average is third highest all time. He also had 13.5 rebounds during his career, and that is third behind Wilt and Michael. But let me read to you from a book in which he was voted one of the top 100 players ever. It says, before Michael Jordan, there was Julius Erving, and before Julius Erving, there was Elgin Baylor. On the timeline of NBA innovators, or of creators who brought something new to the game and made it better than it was before, Baylor holds a prominent place. Elgin, good evening to you. Nice to have you with us tonight. Of all the things that I talked about in the introduction, which is the thing that means the most to Elgin Baylor?
Probably, Ron, probably rebounding. I took a lot of pride in the fact that because of my size, there were times when I played the power forward position when we had, you know, Tommy Hawkins and I were starting forward for the Lakers, and I had to play the power forward position. I played against guys like Luke Jackson, Willis Reed, Nate Thurmond, who were playing that power forward position, and, you know, took great pride in rebounding, you know, being able to, you know, box those big guys out and being able to rebound both the offensive and the defensive boards.
When you take a look at somebody like a Dennis Rodman or an Elgin Baylor or anybody who has been a rebounder, a successful rebounder in pro basketball, is it more attitude than anything else, Elgin?
Well, that and desire, you know, Ron. I think that, you know, it's a desire, it's a determination that you're determined that you're going to get the ball. And I think it becomes an art form. You know, you play the game long enough and you have desire, determination. You study the game, you study where the ball is going to come off, rebound, and then pretty much you take a guy like Robin, who is a fantastic rebounder. He knows pretty much where the ball is going to bounce, you know, with his teammates. And you do that in practice, and you just watch, you know, and over the years you just, you know, just work at it, and you perfect it.
You know, the other thing it says to you, too, about you, and I remember taking a look at some videotape of you, Elgin, and I was caught by the thing that it said in the bio in this top 100 players about the great variety of shots. Where did you come along? Did you want to be the complete player? So that was part of developing Elgin Baylor, the complete basketball player?
Well, Ron, I don't, you know, think that, you know, having a great, you know, arsenal of shots, you know, I think, you know, being a complete player is being able to do all the other things out there on the floor, you know, be able to play the defense, handle the basketball, rebound, you know, being the type of guy that are a go-to player, you know, in the crunch time, a guy that's is going to get the ball and deliver. As far as variety of shots, it just happens, you know. It's nothing that you really work on or practice. More or less the defense when you're playing is going to dictate to what type of shot you like to take. I'm sure most players would like to, you know, just take a little wide open jump shot or an easy layup. But, you know, that's not going to happen. But these things you just create it as you get in that position. You know, it just happens.
In basketball today, of course, they have strength coaches in all sports. But you had incredible strength back then. What was the essence of that?
Well, Ron, you know, we didn't, I don't know when, you know, the strength and conditioning, the weight and the lift and all that. I don't think a lot of that started until probably in the middle 70s or the late 70s. I'm sure it has enhanced, you know, performance of players. I think it cuts down on the injuries. And also, it has prolonged, you know, career of a lot of players. I really think it helps. You know, when I, you know, played, we didn't have anything like that. You know, but I think all the players that came in, when you look at the players, they were just naturally strong. You look at guys like Wayne Emery, guys I mentioned like Bill Bridges, Luke Jackson, Willis Reed. They were just naturally strong, and I, you know, had natural strength. I don't know what it would have been like if we'd have had the strength and conditioning program they have, you know, today, you know, the sports medicine, the diet, all the things they had today, you know, how good, you know, some of the players might have become and how long, much longer they would have played.
I got to tell you, the people that you played back against in those early days in the NBA really thought you were a pain to guard. We had Earl Lloyd with us. I want you to hear what Earl had to say about playing against Elgin Baylor. Here's Earl.
Somebody wrote me a letter, not a letter, and asked me, they asked for an autograph and asked for who's the toughest, you know, who's the best player I ever played against, the toughest guy. And then naturally you're going to name, you're going to pick a guy that you went head-to-head with. I mean, Elgin Baylor, man, had no peer. I mean, the man was just, And see, then you have to understand, too, I mean, you know, Elgin was playing at a time when teams didn't have three or four stars like they have now. And, man, he had the ball all the time. And, I mean, he had the ball where he wanted it, you know, and you scram off with him one-on-one, man, you know, 20, 30 times a night. And, man, that's, you know, that's no fun.
He had a deep respect for you, Elgin.
Well, that's a great compliment coming from Lloyd. Because, you know, I knew Earl. Earl is from that area, well, close to Washington, D.C. I think he's from
Alexandria, Virginia.
And, you know, coming up as, you know, playing in high school and thing, I had the opportunity a few times just to play against Lloyd on the playground. And Lloyd was considered one of the best defensive players in the league. He was, you know, terrific defender. And he was a very physical, aggressive player. And playing against him, you know, you had to go out there and you had to play hard and produce every night. He wasn't an easy guy to play against.
Elgin, where did basketball come into your life? At what point? And, I mean, when did it take on some type of significance with you?
Well, Ron, I grew up in Washington, D.C., and at the time I was growing up, Washington, D.C. was a segregated city. We didn't have any parks or public playgrounds for, you know, the blacks there to play. Most of the time, we just played stickball in the streets. And when I was about 14, there was a park built around the corner from us where I live, and they had a basketball court. That's all they had. They didn't have any other thing, baseball diamond or anything else there. And we would just go around and mess around, you know, and play, and more or less it was just something to unwind, just an outlet, something we had to do, you know, do during the summer, because we didn't have the summer camps. There were no basketball camps or anything like that. So we just went out and just played basketball, and I really got into it when I was about 15 years old.
At that particular time, Elgin, it was a time where people played the game because they had the pure love for it. Do you feel that the young player today has that same love for it, or do they see it as a means to an end?
I think, Ron, some of the young players do. I think a lot of the young players, you know, you look at a guy like Magic and the Bird, some of the players, you know, that former players, you know, during my era, I think there are a lot of players today. I mean, they play for the love of the game. Certainly they want to be compensated. But they are competitors. They like to compete, and they go out there and play. However, there are some that just play because it's something to do. It's a way to make money. It's a way to get notoriety, some publicity. And they make tremendous salaries, and you're not going to just get 100%, you know, every night from a lot of these young players.
One of the things that Earl did say was the pure passion in that players played. They know that they got paid back then, but they really loved this game, and they played it for that reason. And, of course, motivation is a different thing here. Do you agree with that?
Well, it's a different because it's easier now. It's easier to, you know, get into the league. There are a lot of teams. When I came into the league, and I think that were only eight teams. When I came in, there were just eight teams. Teams only carried 10 players. You didn't have a guarantee contract. You didn't get a long-term contract. You just had to go out to produce. You had to play hard every night. You had to practice. You had to be ready to play when you get injured. A lot of players were afraid to even mention an injury to the trainer or to the coach in fear of being, you know, cut or released. They played when they were hurt. It's difficult to get players to play today if there's the least little bit of pain or anything today. There are some players that will play hurt. But it was very difficult then to maintain a job, to stay with the team. Very few players stayed with the team more than 2 or 3 years. Today it's different. You sign players, they get, you know, 5-year contracts, 7-year contracts. Rookies come in, guarantee first round, 3 years. So it's a lot easier. And you can't, you know, blame the players because things have been easy for them from the time that they started and organized basketball through, you know, high school through college.
Elgin, how did you end up at Seattle University?
Well, it's a long story, Ron. From Washington, D.C., again, as I mentioned, you know, the schools were segregated. And just the major colleges, particularly the white university, did not exploit the black high schools in Washington, D.C. So I don't think anyone had an opportunity to ever see me play. And the only offers I had gotten to go to college was from the black universities, you know, Virginia Union, Maryland University, you know, schools, black
sure.
schools nearby, and Howard University. And so happened a friend of mine was in Idaho. I don't know how he got there, but it's a fellow that I played basketball against in Washington, D.C. He was there at the College of Idaho, and so happened I wanted to go away, just get away from the city, because I'd never really been anyplace. And I ended up going to College of Idaho for 1 year. It's a 4-year school, but it's a small college. It's NAIA. And I, you know, had a good year there. We went through our conference undefeated and, you know, made small college All-America. Then a lot of schools started writing me and calling and wanted me to come there, you know, and offer me a scholarship. And I visited Seattle University, one of the schools I visit, and I liked that better than all the other schools, so I decided to stay out west and go to Seattle University.
You played with a guy in Idaho by the name of R.C. Owens, who went on to star in the National Football League, but he was a pretty good basketball player as well.
R.C. was. R.C. Played ball there, and he played football. And, in fact, you know, which really inspired me to play professional basketball. When I say inspired me, it gave me the inspiration, I think, the confidence that I probably needed to feel that I could really, you know, compete at this level. R.C. was living in Seattle, and he was playing with an AAU team called Buchan Bakers. And an all-star basketball team, NBA team, came there to Seattle to play an exhibition game. It was the last game stop. They had been playing in Asia. And so happened Bill Russell and I knew one another in college, and he got me some tickets, and I went to see the game. And a couple of players got hurt, couldn't play, and R.C. was a player that had to fill in for one of the players to play. And he more than held his own. He played extremely well. And I was encouraged by that. You know, R.C. and I played together, and I thought maybe I was maybe just a tiny bit better than R.C., and he played so well that, and I just felt then that, you know, I could play at that level.
That 61-62 season in which you averaged better than 38 points, a lot of people would say, wow. But, of course, that was at a time when a guy by the name of Wilt Chamberlain was playing as well.
Well, you know, it's interesting. You know, I remember when I scored 71 points, and a lot of reporters and writers had asked me, you know, about that. And I said that I think it soon or someday Wilt will score 100 points. And it was not it wasn't long after that that Wilt did score 100 points.
We had a chance to chat with him about today's players. He had a very interesting outlook on that. I'd like to have you hear what he had to say. Here's Wilt.
Have you ever noticed sometime when a player from a, like an NBA team is going to miss a game for whatever reason, and then you see him that day on the bench in his civvies, you know, his suits mm-hmm. or whatever, even though he's going to play the next day, he's in his civvies today. Back in my time, they would have put on their uniform just in case they may have been needed for a moment to shoot a technical foul or just come in maybe to give a foul or whatever. But today, see, the player will not allow himself to do that because if he comes into a game for just a moment or a couple minutes, he messes up his average in points and rebounds and all sorts of things that go down, 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 even though he may be a help to his team. Personally, a lot of bad things happen to him if he does something like that.
That's one of the things that I respect so much about you and other players that played then. You had no consideration except for the love for the game.
Well, you know, you played hurt. It was a short roster. We carried 10 players. And, you know, I guess the attitude was if you can walk, you know, you can play. You know, if you couldn't walk, then you don't play. And, you know, I saw so many guys, to be honest, you know, really had serious injuries, you know, and played. And because of the fact they did play, when looking at the other side, it ended and shortened their career, you know, by the same token. But I just think that if it's not going to really give you a permanent injury or anything like that, and I guess the player should know, you know, more so than the doctor, because the doctor doesn't know just how severe, I mean, as far as the pain and stuff is, you know. Some things, you know, the doctor can enlighten you and tell you what could possibly happen. But I just think if there's no further damage, you know, it's like it's going to be anything permanent. If a player can play, you know, you go out there and play.
Elgin, how do you see the colleges as far as preparing players for professional basketball? Are they doing a better job of it?
Well, when you say doing a better job, you know, the game is, you know, has changed so much. You know, the level of competition is so good. Players are so much better. That is, you know, it's a major leap from college to professional basketball. However, there are players that are just destined to be great players, and the transition is pretty easy for them coming into the NBA. The whole key is to get into the right situation. You know, go with the team that you're going to get an opportunity to produce. They're going to have patience with you, not rushed into a situation where you have to produce, you know, right away.
Elgin, I thoroughly enjoyed having you on the show tonight. I appreciate your time, and thanks about talking about those early days in the NBA. I love hearing about them. Thank you, my friend. Take care, and I hope you'll come back and visit with us again.
I certainly will. Thanks, Ron.
Take a look at these numbers. His career average, 27.4 points, 13.5 rebounds. That's third all-time in professional basketball behind Wilt Chamberlain and Michael Jordan. We continue across the country with you on Sports Byline.